Welcome to our webinar. Our webinar is Integrating Wound Solutions to Maximize Healing Outcomes. Your faculty for this presentation will include myself. I'm Robert Klein. I'm a podiatrist. I'm the division chair for wound care for Prisma Health. I'm also a clinical associate professor of surgery at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Greenville, South Carolina. I also serve as the medical director for the Vascular Health Alliance Wound Healing and Hyperbaric Oxygen Center in Greenville. My co-presenter today is Catherine Milne. She is an advanced practice nurse specializing in wound ostomy and continence. She's affiliated with Connecticut Clinical Nursing Associates located out of Bristol, Connecticut. These are our faculty disclosures. This program is provided by HMP Education and HMP Global Company, and this program is also supported by an educational grant from 3M Healthcare Medical Solutions Division. Our learning objectives for our webinar include evaluating the science, evidence, and wound healing efficacy of oxidizer-generated cellulose, ORC collagen, negative pressure wound therapy, and hybrid drapes. We'll review wound types that would benefit from the use of the new indication utilizing a collagen matrix with ORC and silver under negative pressure wound therapy paired with a silicone drape. And we'll explore through our case studies clinical outcomes from the combined use of negative pressure wound therapy, ORC collagen with silver, hybrid drapes, and advanced wound care technologies. My portion of the talk is on the clinical impact of negative pressure wound therapy and collagen with ORC and silver. I'm going to kind of build the foundation for this talk. Kathy and I are going to be talking about a lot of the same things throughout our lecture. So I'll build the foundation, and Kathy's going to build on that foundation to give us the whole framework for our lecture and this webinar. Now, wounds are a global concern. Ulcers are a definite global concern. I wanted to go over some wound statistics with you. The morbidity associated with wounds is significant, and some of the wounds that we treat as well have a high mortality as well. For example, diabetic foot ulcerations. 25% of patients with diabetes are at risk for developing a diabetic foot ulceration somewhere in their lifetime. Cost for taking care of diabetic foot ulcerations is staggering to our healthcare system. Upwards of $9 to $13 billion is spent annually to take care of diabetic foot ulcerations in the United States. Diabetic foot ulcerations are the leading cause for lower extremity foot amputation worldwide. It's estimated that 85% of lower extremity amputations are preceded by a diabetic foot ulceration, and greater than 1 million diabetic-related amputations are performed annually. Our diabetic patients who have foot ulcerations are also increased risk for mortality. They carry a 2.5 times higher risk of death at 5 years in comparison to the diabetic patient without a history of ulceration. Moving on to venous leg ulcerations, equally problem and equally as expensive in many ways, including morbidity as well. The annual cost to treat venous leg ulcerations in the United States is estimated to be close to $15 billion annually. 55% of our healed venous leg ulcerations recur within 12 months from the time of closure, and 28% of patients will experience greater than 10 episodes of venous leg ulcerations throughout their lifetime. If that wasn't bad enough, pressure injuries equally have some worrisome statistics associated with them as well. More than 2.5 million people in the United States develop pressure injuries annually. Cost to take care of these pressure injuries is equally as staggering, upwards of $12,000 to $40,000 per pressure injury. Now, if your institution is anything like mine, we have a shortage of beds at my hospital. So I have times where I want to get patients into the hospital to take care of their infections and other problems that they may have. But pressure injuries have a tendency to increase length of stay, which complicates things in my system and probably in your system as well, because increased length of stay means less beds available for our patients. I just got back from the Symposium on Advanced Wound Care, and it was very heartwarming to me to see the number of specialists that were at the Symposium on Advanced Wound Care, and a number of specialties represented, healthcare representatives throughout the symposium. And it made me think about the team approach that we have to have when we think about wound care. We really need to have a multidisciplinary team approach. In addition to the patient's primary care provider, there needs to be a wound specialist. It could be a nurse practitioner, a physical therapist, a podiatrist, an MD, a DO, family practitioner, but someone needs to be managing that wound. But within that subset, we also need specialists that have special things that they add to that patient's treatment plan. For lower extremity and foot wounds, for example, podiatry is a perfect example. For surgical offloading, for debridement of wounds, taking care of any foot issues, in particular on our diabetic foot. Nursing is a critical component to that multidisciplinary team approach, whether it's providing nursing care within the hospital or in our clinics or in our offices or the home health nurses that put on our negative pressure wound therapy devices or compression. Nursing is a critical component to that multidisciplinary team approach. Vascular as well. Our patients, in many instances, have compromised blood flow systems, either on the arterial side or the venous side. So ways that we can improve blood flow to get wounds to heal, ways that we can address venous disease. That's where our vascular surgeons and our interventionalists come in to address the vascular issues in our team approach. Infectious disease as well. I just got off the phone a few minutes ago. I had a patient that had a very unusual culture that had multiple bacteria reported, and the patient had many allergies. So I consulted infectious disease on what antibiotic would be the most appropriate antibiotic using that team approach again. Certainly want to use infectious disease for the more complicated bone and soft tissue infections as well. Our surgical specialists, whether they're orthopedists or general surgeons or some other type of surgical specialists to do our reconstructive procedures as well as, unfortunately, sometimes our amputations. We may not think about these other providers as part of the team approach, but they equally play an important role, such as the diabetes educator, educating our patients about their disease process so that hopefully when we get them close, they don't wind up back where they were. Our physical therapist to gait train muscle strengthening, compression, debridements, our occupational therapist to get the patients back to where they need to be. We hardly think about depression associated with wounds, but depression can be associated with wounds, especially those chronic wounds, those patients that have maybe venous leg ulcerations that have a lot of exudate and drainage and odor to it. A lot of those patients become isolated. They stay in, they don't interact with their peers, they don't go out to dinner, they don't go to church. So it's important that we identify those patients who are at risk for depression and get them to their appropriate specialist, such as a psychologist. Our social workers as well. Our patients have many needs, transportation needs, durable medical equipment needs. There are things that sometimes we don't think about or can't think about in the office that the social worker has easy access and tools to take care of. And lastly, but not all inclusive, the nutritionist. Our wounds take a lot of protein and minerals to heal, and that's where the nutritionist comes in to address those needs for our patient. So really a multidisciplinary team approach is critical to getting our wounds to heal. Now, we've all had cut and scrapes in our life before, and typically they heal pretty uneventfully. They go through that linear cycle, what we call the wound healing cycle. We get an injury to the skin, we get a clot, or what we call hemostasis. We have cells that migrate to the wound and clean up the wound and cause some inflammation, maybe get a little swelling within the wound itself. We then move on to another phase, which is called the proliferative phase, where we have some granulation tissue and collagen laid down, and hopefully get some fresh skin. And eventually that wound contracts and we get a scar, and it goes on to healing in that nice linear fashion. Unfortunately, with our chronic and our hard to heal wounds, a lot of those wounds wind up being stuck in that second wound healing phase, what we call the inflammatory phase. There's a lot of production and recruitment of matrix metalloproteases, what we call MMPs, as well as reactive oxygen species, which create a chronic inflammatory environment of the wound, not allowing that wound to go on to that proliferative and remodeling phase of wound healing. So we have to break that cycle so that we can get that wound to move on to those other stages and eventually go on to closure. Now, there are patient factors which also can impede wound healing. Chronic illnesses, for example, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, cancer, vascular disease, these are things that can impede or slow wound healing. My practice is primarily comprised of adults, and a lot of them are older adults, and age is a contributing factor that can impede or delay wound healing. We've all probably had talks with our patients about the importance of stopping smoking because we know that smoking can delay and impair wound healing. And nutritional status as well is very important. We talked about the nutritionist before about protein supplements and that MDT team approach, but nutritional status, if the patient is malnourished, that certainly can affect wound healing. Stress equally can affect wound healing. Our patients who are depressed might be under stress, or patients who have a wound and can't get to work might be under stress, and that can certainly impede or delay wound healing. Bioburden within the wound can affect the way our wounds heal and slow wound healing up. BMI or obesity, our morbidly obese patients can affect or impede wound healing. And certainly certain medications can as well. Steroids, immunosuppressive medications can slow the wound healing process up. And then lastly, the immune status of the patient. If they're immunocompromised, that can be a patient factor which can impede or delay wound healing. And then adding all that together, the local wound environment that the patient has can certainly impede or delay wound healing as well. So when we think about wound healing, we have to kickstart that healing process. We have to break that cycle. We have to break that chronic inflammatory cycle because imbalance causes delayed wound healing. And what do I mean by imbalance? Well, we have cellular proteases, matrix metalloproteases, MMPs that can affect wound healing. They degrade the extracellular matrix and the growth factors and the collagen within the wound, and that's a persistent problem. We have bacterial overload, bacterial proteases and toxins within the wound, which lead to tissue damage as well, and also lead to chronic inflammation. We have cytokines and free radicals within the wound, which lead to increased inflammatory response within the wound. It takes us back to that vicious cycle, which goes round and round and round. So we have to break that cycle to take that wound to go on to healing. So how do we break that cycle and how do we rebalance the wound environment? The way that we rebalance the wound environment is one, we want to maintain a moist wound environment. We want to reduce the microbial burden within the wound, and we want to lower that protease and free radical activity. And when we do that, when we lower all those things down, we get that optimal wound management environment, which stimulates wound healing, which can take that wound on from the chronic inflammatory phase to the proliferative phase to the remodeling phase of wound healing. I want to talk with you a little bit about the sacrificial substrate story. When tissue injury occurs, collagen will be replaced by fibroblasts in a chronic or hard-to-heal wound. And signaling for fibroblast recruitment is not occurring, and the collagen inside of the wound, the native collagen within inside of the wound, is quickly being degraded and broken down. This collagen degradation is triggered by those excess matrix metalloproteases and MMPs that I spoke about just a few minutes ago. So if there's an abundance of collagen within the wound, it can help minimize the unfavorable effects of those matrix metalloproteases. So by delivering collagen in a dressing form to the wound, that can serve as a sacrificial substrate for those excess matrix metalloproteases. And that's where a product such as collagen matrix with ORC and silver comes in. Now I'm going to briefly talk about collagen matrix with ORC and silver, once again, setting that groundwork for Kathy, and she's going to build upon that. But the collagen matrix with ORC and silver is basically comprised of 55% collagen, 44% oxidized regenerated cellulose, and 1% silver. And again, as I shared, Kathy's going to build on this much more and talk about collagen matrix with ORC in much more detail. So I will defer to her part of this presentation. I want to talk about negative pressure wound therapy because that's one of the key things in my toolkit when I think about how I want to take care of chronic and hard-to-heal wounds. Indications for negative pressure wound therapy are many. A lot of the run-of-the-mill and everyday wounds that we see in our wound care centers and in our offices and in the facilities where we work, such as those pressure ulcerations, those diabetic foot ulcerations, and those venous leg ulcerations. Negative pressure wound therapy is also indicated for acute and traumatic wounds, partial thickness burns, wound dehiscence, and flaps and grafts. So when I recommend negative pressure wound therapy to my patient, I tell them that the negative pressure wound therapy is going to create a wound healing environment. And how do I explain that to them? I try to explain them in simple terms, and I say that there's two concepts that we're going to work off of. One is called macro strain, and the other one is called micro strain. We're basically going to cut a piece of foam to the size of the wound, and we're going to put it inside of the wound. We're going to cover it with some drape, and we're going to put a negative pressure wound therapy device on top of the drape, which is going to create negative pressure wound therapy. And what that's going to do is going to draw the wound edges together. Because we have foam that's been cut to the size of the wound, it's going to have direct and complete contact with the wound bed. And that's going to evenly distribute negative pressure all across that wound. And as we're getting negative pressure on that wound, it's going to remove exudate or fluid from the wound in addition to infectious materials and cellular debris. It's going to reduce edema within the wound as well as in the peri-wound. It's going to promote perfusion to the wound. On a microstrain level, what it's going to do, it's going to promote granulation tissue by cell migration and proliferation. And Kathy, again, will be talking about this a little bit in her portion of our presentation. Now, there are some common misconceptions about negative pressure wound therapy. I have a lot of learners that rotate on my service, both at the wound center where I work and in the hospital. And some of the common misconceptions that I hear about negative pressure wound therapy include that it's only for large wounds, or negative pressure is only used for large amounts of exudate. or negative pressure wound therapy should only be used when other modalities fail. And I'm going to challenge you today and hopefully illustrate as well that negative pressure wound therapy is ideal for small wounds as well. Negative pressure wound therapy does other things than just remove fluid. And negative pressure should be used early on as possible because it really sets the stage for our wounds to heal. If you look at the photo on the right, that's a patient that I did a partial amputation of their great toe. The patient developed a post-op infection and wound dehiscence, requiring the wound to be opened up. This patient would be a patient that some would consider using an advanced wound care dressing on to take it on to closure. They would say, you know, it's a small wound, it's only a great toe wound, it doesn't really need negative pressure wound therapy. But I'll challenge you that negative pressure wound therapy, and hopefully illustrate in just a couple of seconds how effective negative pressure wound therapy can be to help close these wounds and close these wounds very quickly. So here we have an open wound. Negative pressure wound therapy has been applied. We put foam inside the wound. We're benefiting from that macro strain and that micro strain. We're drawing those wound edges together. We're removing exudate from the wound. We're taking away cellular debris and infectious materials. And now we have a wound where we can use an advanced wound care dressing to take that wound on to closure. So again, this is something that you should consider early on. And it's not only for small wounds, and it's not only for wounds that have large amounts of exudate, and it should be used early on versus late. Want to talk a little bit about drape technology, and then Kathy is going to expand on drape technology in her portion of our webinar. But not all negative pressure wound therapy drapes are created alike. And what I'd like to do is show you our current acrylic negative pressure wound therapy drape. You're all very familiar with this. We apply the skin prep. We do some window framing around the wound. We do some one, two, and blue. We're tearing those blue pieces off. We cut a little bit, and then we cut some more, and then we cut some more, and then we eventually get a seal. That's very time-consuming. If your acrylic drape sticks to itself, it's very difficult for it to unstick. So I want to introduce you to the new silicone acrylic hybrid drape. With this new silicone acrylic hybrid drape, you're going to cut the drape as needed from handle to handle, having at least 5 centimeter border. And cutting from handle to handle allows for easier placement. You remove the single release liner, so there's no more one, two, and blue. It's a very easy single release liner that you remove. And then lastly, if the drape sticks to itself or gloves, you can unstick it. And not that I'm one that uses props a lot, but I have an example of the silicone acrylic hybrid drape here. And you can see if it sticks to itself, I can easily unstick it and reposition it. Whereas with the acrylic drape, that would not happen. And if I put it on my hand, the same thing. If I'm not happy with the placement of it, I can easily just peel it right off and then reposition it back down on my hand. And with the traditional acrylic drape, that would never, ever happen. So the silicone acrylic drape is designed to be used without skin prep. We don't want to use skin prep with this, and there's certainly less window framing. One of the key things that you want to remember is that you need to have 5 centimeters of border from the track pad and the wound. I want to talk about a new indication using collagen matrix with silver and ORC that can be combined with a portable negative pressure wound therapy device. This has recently received a new FDA indication, and I'd like to share with you the new indication. Like any new indication or product that you're using for the first time or in combination, you do want to check the instructions for use, and the instructions for use for using collagen silver and ORC along with negative pressure can be found in the collagen silver and ORC container, not in your negative pressure wound therapy kit. The wide areas are applicable to use when you're using collagen with silver without negative pressure wound therapy, and the gray shaded areas cover the combined use of collagen silver and ORC along with negative pressure wound therapy. So after checking your instructions for use, you're going to prepare your wound bed like you normally would. You're going to debride the wound when necessary, and you ensure that you have adequate hemostasis. Then you're going to trim the excess collagen silver and ORC with scissors to fit the wound. You're then going to fold the collagen silver and ORC in half, and you're going to create parallel slits throughout the collagen silver and ORC, ideally creating 7 slits, which will result in 8 equal areas, or 8 equal sections of collagen silver and ORC that are equally spaced apart. And then you'll place that inside of the wound, and then you'll apply your negative pressure wound therapy as you typically would. So I want to take you through some case studies that illustrate using collagen silver and OSC in combination with negative pressure wound therapy. And the first case that I'd like to share with you is a 77-year-old male who had a left diabetic foot infection which had been present for 2 weeks. The patient presented to the emergency department and was emergently taken to the OR by our vascular surgery team, and he underwent an open first ray amputation. We talked about factors that impede or delay wound healing, and this patient had a lot of those factors that can impede or delay wound healing. He was diabetic. He had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, acute kidney injury. He was morbidly obese. He had bacteremia. He was a chronic nicotine user. Again, smoking can delay or impede wound healing, and he had neuropathy. If you look at the photo on the left, he had a grossly infected great toe, and he had a bone infection of both the toe and the first metatarsal. And for source control, to prevent him from going septic, even further, he underwent an open first ray amputation by the vascular service, and then he was referred to the wound center for further care. So I saw the patient for the first time 20 days post-op. The patient was discharged home with a negative pressure wound therapy device, but they were not using combination therapy. If you look at the three photos, you can see his granulation tissue is not very healthy. It's pink, it's pale. He's got a lot of fissures, cracks, and crannies, and depth to the wound. And to me, this is a wound that is a perfect example for using a collagen silver and ORC in combination with negative pressure wound therapy. And that's exactly what I did for this patient. I went ahead and debrided his wound like we normally would, and I ensured that we had hemostasis. And then I cut the collagen silver and ORC to fit the size of his wound, and I made sure that I put the slits in equally spaced apart. And then we applied his negative pressure wound therapy device. This is the patient 4 weeks after a combination therapy of collagen matrix with ORC and silver under negative pressure wound therapy. You can see the photo on the left. He has healthy, robust granulation tissue to the skin line. All those cracks, fissures, and crannies and areas of depth are gone, and now he has very robust, beefy red granulation tissue that really is ready for some type of advanced wound care technology or product to take it onto closure. I wanted to be one and done with this patient to get him closed as quickly as possible. So I consulted one of my vascular surgeons for him to do a split thickness skin graft. And this patient's journey is still unfolding. The second case that I want to share with you is a 54-year-old female who had a chronic diabetic neuropathic ulceration on the plantar aspect of her right foot, which had been present since 2020. We had talked again about factors that can impede or delay wound healing, and she certainly fit that list as well. She had congestive heart failure. She was diabetic with peripheral neuropathy. She had anxiety and panic disorder. She was obese, coronary artery disease, and she had cardiomyopathy. When I saw the patient for the first time, she had a portable negative pressure wound therapy device, but I don't think it was being used as ideally as it could have. And she's another patient under the right circumstance that where combination therapy of collagen silver and ORC along with negative pressure wound therapy would be very beneficial. So I went ahead and debrided her wound. So the photo on the left is her after debridement. She had a lot of undermining and she had some tunneling. So I went ahead and made the wound what its actual size was. And I went ahead and prepared the collagen silver and ORC to put on the wound and to use in combination with negative pressure wound therapy. You can see the parallel slits that we have in the collagen silver and ORC. And then we applied her negative pressure wound therapy device in the clinic. This is the patient 4 weeks after using collagen matrix with ORC and silver under negative pressure. And the wound is now ready for her first application of a human allograft. You can see the wound is a lot smaller. There's a lot less depth. And she's made significant progress. This was a wound that had been present for several years, but she's made some significant progress. If we look at the post-debridement photo on the right and compare it to the left, just within 4 weeks, she's made significant progress to the point where we can use an allograft to hopefully take her onto closure. And like the first case study I showed, her journey is still on to closure. The last patient that I want to share with you before I turn over to Kathy is a 51-year-old male who was status post great toe amputation for a chronic wound that had been present since December of 2021. Again, he had a lot of the same factors that can impede or delay wound healing. He was a poorly controlled diabetic. He had hypertension. He had osteomyelitis of the remaining portion of his great toe. He was depressed, and I would be depressed as well. You can see he's got a below-knee amputation on the right. He's got a chronic non-healing wound on the left foot, which had been present since December of 2021. I can't see how he could not be depressed over this situation. He had an MSSA and MRSA infection, and as I shared, he had a below-knee amputation on the right side as well. There wasn't much that I could offer this patient other than a surgery, but I had recommended excising the ulceration, doing an ulcerectomy along with a partial first-rate amputation. I certainly wanted to send that tissue for pathology as well, because a wound that's been open for that long, we also want to rule out a malignancy. So I went ahead and took the patient to the operating room and did an open first-rate amputation. I saw the patient 3 days post-op, and I added collagen silver and ORC to his negative pressure wound therapy. And this is the patient 3 weeks post-op with collagen matrix with ORC silver under negative pressure wound therapy. We can see a lot less edema. That macro strain is really working. We're re reducing edema within the wound as well as in the peri-wound itself. We're promoting granulation tissue. We're drawing those wound edges together. We're removing exudate from the wound, and the wound is measuring smaller. This is the patient 4 weeks after collagen matrix with ORC and silver with portable negative pressure wound therapy. We can see that we now have granulation tissue to the skin line. I went ahead and discontinued his negative pressure wound therapy device at that time and just used collagen silver and ORC to take this patient onto closure. And we can see at 6 weeks, the patient was closed. He had 4 weeks of negative pressure wound therapy in combination with collagen silver and ORC. And then 2 additional weeks where he had collagen silver and ORC, and we took that patient's wound onto closure. He was fitted for a diabetic shoe with a custom insole, and hopefully we have closed that patient's chapter out where he won't have any additional problems moving forward. With that, I am going to turn the slide deck over to Kathy, who is going to be talking about peri-wound skin integrity, the why of integrating therapies. And Kathy, I'm going to let you go on from here.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Klein. I loved your cases. They were really, really fascinating. And I'm glad you were able to explain the science really well, because I think we need to know the why of why we do things. And one of the things that we have to think about, I know that you spent a lot of time on the wound itself, but we also have to think about peri-wound skin damage. And when you have damage to that peri-wound skin, you actually can delay the healing because you remember you have to have those keratinocytes migrate over to close that wound with epithelialization. And if it's a bad surface, you're not going to get those cells to move. And actually, when you have disrupted skin barrier in the peri-wound, you actually increase your risk of infection. I'm going to show you that when I show you an example of how I use biofluorescence in my practice. And frankly, you know, having skin that's damaged, and we all know this, we've had skin fissures on our legs and fingers and hands, these paper cuts, you know, abrasions from riding bicycles and falling, you know, it hurts. And so when you have pain and discomfort, you just, you know, think about this all the time instead of thinking about good things like what to eat, how to offload your wound, how to manage other problems in your life. And so anytime you damage the skin around the wound, just like if you have delayed wound healing, you are going to increase your cost of care. Now there's many things that can actually disrupt skin barrier, but I want to talk first about medical adhesive related skin injury, also known as MARSI. Now, most people think it's a skin tear from an adhesive, but actually it encompasses it. The name is almost too narrow because it, when you read the literature, it actually encompasses irritant dermatitis, allergic dermatitis, folliculitis, and as well as maceration. So it's not just tearing of the skin. It's all types of skin barrier disruption related to an emetical adhesive. Now, just like we have risk factors for delayed healing that Dr. Klein eloquently discussed, we also have risk factors for MARSI. We have environmental factors, and you can read them here. So who has excessively dry skin? Well, patients with diabetes because they have autonomic peripheral neuropathy, people with prolonged exposure to moisture, and that can be related to the negative pressure wound therapy drape. It can be related to the type of dressing. It can be related to the patient has gone swimming or taken a shower and not changed the dressing. Certain medications can actually predispose people to a peri-wound skin disruption. And then clearly we know about tape and the repeated use of tape and other types of adhesives. I think we are all very familiar with silicone. Really, silicone, if you've been in wound care long enough, has really changed all of our practice, because before we were using just straight acrylic. And we still see people using just acrylic tapes. And we cringe just trying to remove those tapes from those patients. Now, think about other factors, and these are patient related. So if you're very, very young or very, very old, you are at a high risk for MARSI. And that's because the very young does not have a very thick epidermal or dermal layer. And when you're very old, the same thing happens. But also with the very old patient, you actually disrupt what we call the retae pegs. And so that's really the convolution between the dermis and the epidermis that kind of keep everything moving together. Well, as you age, they actually flatten out. And so if you're more mature, you will actually start seeing like what we call crepe skin. And then when you are very, very old, there is no connection between the epidermis and dermis, and you can actually cause a lot of damage. We've all seen that. A lot of times we actually feel like we can see the patient's entire vascular system in their arm, because they also will lose fat padding there. Now, people we know that are at higher risk are people with darker skin tones. And that's because we are not looking for it, and it's harder to find. So when it's harder to find, we actually may reapply more medical adhesive. And then if you have a history of eczema or dermatitis, you already have a skin barrier disruption there, and you can just exacerbate it. And clearly, if you're dehydrated or malnourished, that also is problematic. Now, let's talk about the pain of negative pressure wound therapy drapes. As Dr. Klein talked about, all drapes are not created the same. And so the components can really impact that peri-wound skin. So most of the negative pressure wound drapes out there are made of acrylic adhesives. And if we understand how acrylic adhesives work, then we can understand why they can be a lot very painful for our patients when we remove them, because acrylic actually will adhere to the skin, the top layer of the epidermal cells, right away. And that's why we cannot lift it up and move it and reposition it. Once it's stuck, right? And then over a period of time, that acrylic kind of melts into those little gaps in between the cells. And so it strengthens over time. So when we remove our drape, you know, two to 4 days later, depending on what you're using your negative pressure therapy for, you are going to have a large, what we call peel force. And you can see over on the right-hand side that you're literally lifting the skin up, because that acrylic has gone into those little gaps of the cells. So you have to remove it. And when you do that, you actually remove epidermal cells. And when you remove epidermal cells, you've actually disrupted your skin barrier even more. And so when that happens, you actually have increased transepidermal water loss from your dermis. And that's why you see a lot of maceration underneath these acrylic drapes. In addition, those acrylic drapes, they have very little moisture vapor transmission rate. So they don't allow moisture to evaporate through. So it's pretty occlusive. Now, the silicone adhesives, which we're very familiar with a lot of our dressings out there, actually have a very low surface tension. When you look at that, you can see that they can form really quickly, but they don't, that silicone is tacky and it doesn't sink in between the cells and grab on and strengthen over time. So the adhesiveness that you get when you initially put things on, it's going to stay that same strength. So there's two advantages. You can actually pick it up and move it around. And we've seen that with our typical silicone dressings that we use for pressure injuries and other leg wounds, pressure diabetic wounds, skin tears, so on and so forth. And then your peel force is very little. And you can see on the right, there is a very minimal peel force because that adhesive hasn't sunken in and strengthened over time. Now, when you remove a silicone, you remove very few epidermal cells. So your skin barrier disruption is pretty minimal. The only problem that with silicone is it doesn't really stay well to plastic. So if you're trying to put plastic over it, it can be sometimes problematic. Now, when you change negative pressure wound therapy drapes. Most of your patients really want pain medicine, and it's not because of the foam dressing that you placed into the wound. Mainly it's the drape, and because it's like tearing a huge Band-Aid off, and it's very, very painful. So there is a new drape out there. It's a silicone acrylic hybrid drape, and it is available out on the market, and it is really unique because it is both acrylic, so you have a good tight seal, and it's also silicone. So that's the outside of the circles, and the inside of the circles are the acrylic. And it does provide a high moisture vapor transmission rate, which actually reduce the amount of macerations that you see on the peri wound. So what kind of wounds do we see? We see a whole bunch of wounds that have problems out there, and all of these could use a negative pressure wound therapy for the most part, except for the guy who's intubated. And the foot wound, we would send right off to Dr. Klein. He would do vascular studies, do a debridement, and then most likely use negative pressure. All of those wounds have challenges in the peri wound. So we have to think about the etiology here of skin irritation. So they can be chemical, they can be mechanical, and those mechanical irritations, some of which we already talked about, extrinsic, such as acrylic drapes, or intrinsic, or they can be system related. And we're going to talk about that. So when we talk about a chemical peri wound skin barrier disruption, what we're seeing is if you think of the skin as brick and mortar, and that mortar actually is disrupted. So when you disrupt that mortar, a couple things happen. You lose more moisture from you, right? So you are actually losing water, and that's why burns are so terrible, and you need to replace those fluids cc by cc because of the dehydration that can occur. But when you disrupt that skin barrier, you also are allowing bacteria to get in, and you're also stimulating the immune system. So your T cells are starting to be activated, and that can wreak a little bit of havoc here. So when you have skin barrier disruption, we're really seeing either exudate is a problem, or an immune response, which would be an adhesive allergy. So let's talk a little bit about exudate first. When we think about exudate, we always think, oh, it's always from the wound. But we have to look a little bit deeper here, because there are a lot of reasons that you can have exudate from a wound, including heart failure, hepatic failure. I think we've all seen those patients who've had a skin barrier disruption, and they have generalized anasarca, and they just pour fluid out of their arms or their legs. And we've seen people with lymphedema, and they have a leg wound, and they're just pouring, dripping clear lymph fluid out of there. Clearly, when you have medication, that can actually increase the edema in the wound, and especially in the lower extremity. Steroids will do that. NSAIDs will do that. The big thing that really gets me is the calcium channel blockers. And it's very easy to fix a calcium channel blocker, because there are a lot of other drugs that can treat hypertension help the heart at the same time. And so it's a real quick call to the patient's primary care doc or the cardiologist to say, hey, we're having some increased lower extremity edema here. I think it's from the calcium channel blocker. Is there something else that we can do so we can reduce the edema? Clearly, fluid overload will do this. And of course, malnutrition. So if you have a low albumin, you're more likely to produce a lot more exudate. And you can see the other reasons here. So there's also inflammatory exudate, and Dr. Klein's kind of already alluded to this. So when you have bacteria, you actually have these bacteria that come in, they set up in the wound, and that's really what we would consider contamination and then colonization. So when they start to multiply, they are colonized, and usually for the most part, they're not damaging the host, but they're planning a war room, and they're going to come and get you, right? So when they start to invade the host and give a problem using the host resources, oxygen, glucose, so on and so forth, that's when they actually start to become very damaging. And that will actually set off those white blood cells to actually produce more reactive oxygen species. The bacteria actually kind of fight back. They neutralize things. And so now you have these high levels of our reactive oxygen species, as well as matrix metalloproteases, because they're coming in to try to reduce the inflammation, and nothing's going right. So that is an inflammatory exudate, and that's very, very damaging to the peri-wound skin because it is full of irritants. Now, besides those matrix metalloproteases, Dr. Klein kind of talked about when cells die and they don't go through apoptosis, which means they die and your body takes those cellular debris away. They just sit there. I kind of call it like the dust bunnies of your wound. You know, we all have dust bunnies somewhere in our house, and they can be unsightly. Well, you have dust bunnies in your wound when you have an inflamed wound. So they just sit there and they just gather more and more dust bunnies, or more dust, so to speak. So you have to get rid of that. And so debridement is the key to do that. So we have those cellular waste products. We have fibrin. So fibrin really is the telltale sign that you have a biofilm there. That's that yellow thing that people want to call slough, but it's really adherent. And that really is a byproduct of having biofilm in that wound. So I use infrared, and I use infrared to see if I have the difference between a cellulitis or inflammation. I can do that by temperature. You know, your typical inflammatory response is your, you know, rubor, color, dolor, tumor, right? So swelling, pain, redness, and heat. So when I use my infrared, I can tell by the degree of change in temperature between my wound and my peri-wound or my contralateral extremity if I have inflammation or cellulitis. And that helps me treat either with an antibiotic, or if I have just strict inflammation, I know I need something to reduce the inflammation in that wound bed. And you can see here that the wound itself is fairly cool, but some of the intact skin around that wound is hot. So the lighter the color, the darker, the more chance of temperature changes greater than 3 degrees centigrade, which would indicate cellulitis. Now, I also use biofluorescence, and so that actually uses special light waves to detect fluorescing bacteria. So there's actually these little things inside the bacteria that will glow in the presence of these certain infrared special lights. So When you look at this wound, like on the left, you've got a diabetic foot wound, first met head. You've got, your wound is clean. It's not glowing, but look at the peri wound. That's all macerated. It's red. It's glowing. It's loaded with bacteria. You have a little bit of this beautiful blue glow. That's Pseudomonas. And so I have a little Pseudomonas there. But one of the things that we don't really pay enough attention to, so we've debrided or we plan to debride this wound, but look between the toes. So when you have somebody with a diabetic foot wound on the med head or somewhere else, always check in between the toes and always do a really good cleaning, because you have a disrupted barrier here. Your bacteria is growing. In the middle wound, you can see the same thing. I have a little Pseudomonas probably at the 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock area, but look how disrupted that skin barrier is. Even though visually it looks fine, it's glowing full of bacteria, and most of that is Pseudomonas. And over on the right is a pressure wound. Also, you can see that the inside of the wound itself looks pretty good, because we've done good wound hygiene inside the wound. We haven't done the best wound hygiene outside the wound. So we really need to spend a lot of time cleaning the wound and cleaning the peri wound. So here's a contact irritant dermatitis. You can usually determine that because a really, really good history, but it's usually blanchable and you've got dry, flaky skin. Most of our patients will complain that it's either burning or it is extremely pruritic. And that's because we've actually had some stimulation of the immune system, because we've lost our skin barrier. And then we've talked a little bit about the mechanical injury with drapes earlier, but a lot of things can cause skin stripping, including dressings. And so I did a biofluorescence of this patient, and it's really interesting because, yeah, I've got some things in the wound that aren't happy, but look at the dry skin around that patient. It doesn't look bad when you look at it visually, but when you biofluoresce, you've got a lot of nooks and crannies and cracks, and dry skin is just as equally as harmful as wet skin because it can harbor bacteria underneath. But also look at what I've done when I've removed the dressing. You can see how I have stripped the stratum corneum right around that wound. So even though it does that, it portion of the foot and the wound doesn't, peri-wound doesn't look like it's injured, it certainly has lost the its barrier function. So let's talk about the system related. And I think we always spend, and we should, look at our patients, look at their social system, their social determinants of health, what we can do. But we also have to look at our own system, right? And a lot of times you see, oh, I don't know what happened. And this is a great example of somebody that actually put a negative pressure wound therapy on without protecting the peri-wound skin and actually caused some damage from the actual contact of the foam with negative pressure to the intact skin. So we've lost our skin barrier here. So what contributes to something like this? And we always want to blame one person or one thing. And actually, it's always accumulation of a number of things that are wrong in the system. When we really start looking at it, the 14% of all the harm events in the United States are reported. So that means 86% are not, right? And so that's pretty scary. And 61% that were reported, that should be reported, weren't. And that's because, oh, that staff thinks, oh, you know, that's all, you know, it usually happens. I'm not worried about it. And that includes medical adhesive related skin damage. When you rip somebody's skin, that's a reportable event. But we always think, well, that happens a lot. So I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to report it. And then sometimes people say, you know, I report it some of the time, but this time I didn't. You know, and there are a lot of reasons for that. And a lot of it is time. It takes time to report and fill out the forms and so on and so forth. So we need to look at our system to see if there's a streamlined way to improve our care and look at what we're doing and how to improve it. And there are a lot of contributing factors to these adverse events, especially those in the peri-wound. You know, a lot of it may be related to scope of practice. You know, some people just aren't educated. They didn't have the education or training to consider what would be a peri-wound skin event, you know, such as a nurse's aide, and maybe they remove some tape by mistake and they cause a skin tear. They wouldn't know all the things that you need to do to think about removing a medical adhesive. We have new evidence that happens all the time, so you always have to educate people. And then we have organizational culture. If your culture does not really embrace patient safety as a core value, then you're not going to see as many adverse events being reported. And then we do have reactions to environmental issues such as hurricanes and earthquakes and tornadoes and natural disasters, but also due to political issues. And I'm not talking, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm talking about investigative reporting when they somebody like the Washington Post talked about a recent state that had was not reporting pressure ulcers. But, you know, when you start looking at, you know, the deep part of this, actually they were following the rules, but you know, there's misinformation out there and people react to it and then feel they have to react again to it. So to reduce adverse events, you really should be looking at your system and doing a systematic approach to improve care. So that means identifying the product problem, going to somebody and informing a committee, saying really looking at the costs of what that adverse event is besides patient pain and discomfort, because it costs us money to have an adverse event. You've got to plan some of the steps that you want to do to try to improve the system. You want to implement it, monitor your results, and then adapt to the change. And that's really the hardest problem because we're all having staffing issues. We're having people come in, come out. So it's hard to get a change to really solidify these days. So what we have a tendency to do is say, oh, we've changed the process, or event rates have decreased, things are going well, we'll move on to the next problem, the fire of the moment. And then that initial problem starts to slip back. So it really means we always have to keep the foot on the gas pedal because barrier preservation is key. If you don't preserve the chemical barrier or the physical barrier or the immune barrier, then you're going to have a problem. So here's a great case of peri-wound maceration. This is a patient with a diabetic foot ulcer on the plantar heel. So there are a lot of ways you should be managing it. The first thing you have to do is remove all that wet desquamation as much as you can. You can, I probably would use a 15 blade. I'm pretty good at removing that with a 15 blade. Other people might use a sponge or maybe a curette. So it really depends on your comfort level and your scope of practice. And you have to address the bioburden. So why is this wound so macerated? And choose the appropriate skin protectant. So there are a lot of skin protectants out there. There are barrier films. And barrier films are good for intact skin that don't have any visual maceration, where the advanced barriers are usually made of cyanoacrylate. So they're the ones that can be placed on wet, weepy wounds. They are not tackifiers. So people think, oh, I'm going to use a barrier film on this, thinking that their dressing is going to stay on better. It doesn't. It's not supposed to get stick. It is supposed to protect your skin and provide a barrier. Dr. Klein talked about how collagens work. So I do want to talk a little bit about this. So collagens, how do they really impact bioburden? Well, Dr. Klein talked about how they come in and act as this substrate, this sacrificing substrate. Well, what they actually also do is provide a scaffolding for the fibroblasts to hang on to, and then actually you will start that whole migration of your fibroblasts and morphing into your collagen. They also bind matrix metalloproteases. So as Dr. Klein said, if you have a high level of inflammation, you're going to bind those MMPs. The other thing that collagens do is that they call in the good guys. They call in the army. They call in those macrophages and then actually recruit more fibroblasts. Elastase, which is we don't think about, we usually think about MMPs 1, 2, and 9 as being the most inflammatory, but elastase is pretty bad too. So it will reduce those levels. And you can actually add an antimicrobial agent such as silver. And the ORC silver is one of those agents to be a delivery system. So collagens come in a number of different sources and formats. So I like to think about where are you getting your collagen from? So you can get them from plants or animals, or you can make them up in the lab. And we're seeing more and more synthetic collagens being experimented with, but really in our practice, day-to-day practice, we're really seeing animal-based products. So we're seeing collagen from beef and sheep and pigs and horses and chickens, and actually rooster combs, not female chickens, so roosters. And so we have to think about, so not only their form, but where they come from. So the forms can be gels or powders, foams, films, sponges, and then they can be combined with either antimicrobials or with an alginate. And sometimes we've seen them combined with antibiotics in other places other than the U.S. We do see using collagen. So taking that collagen and making nanofibers, that's really kind of the next new technology that we're going to be seeing. And then we have seen ingestible supplements also as collagen. So collagen can be native, meaning it's just extracted and not taken apart. It can be partially denatured, where you start to take some of the strands of that wound protein, or it can be denatured and which means you've taken all those strands, it's all apart, and that can be then broken down to either hydrolyzed or non-hydrolyzed. So you really kind of want to think about getting a hydrolyzed collagen, because your body, if it takes a native collagen, has to take it to the denatured hydrolyzed portion before it really starts to do what it needs to do. So the problem is that you want something that's already, you're not making your body work harder. So there are advantages here is because it's hydrolyzed, you're actually recruiting your neutrophils to the site and increasing your macrophage concentration, and you're rebalancing. Now, Dr. Klein talked about rebalancing. This helps you rebalance, and it will bind platelet-derived growth factor. The nice thing about hydrolyzed collagen is it will bind it and then slowly re-release it. So you're getting a growth factor available to that wound bed when your inflammation has reduced. Now, the ORC, or oxidized regenerated cellulose, has a lot of studies out there. And what they have found is that degrades glucose to glucuronic acid. That lowers the pH. The lower pH actually reduces the bacteria and has bacteriostatic properties. And of course, the ORC piece actually helps cell migration and growth. And as Dr. Klein already alluded to, reduces protease activities and scavengers free radicals. So I want to talk a little bit about synergy. Dr. Klein already kind of talked about using ORC and negative pressure, but I have to talk about my case, right? So this is a guy on the left, had 2 weeks of negative pressure in his sternal wound after a CABG. And it looks okay. It's a pale wound bed. It's got some granulation, but it's pale granulation. And it's really not moving. This wound has not moved in 2 weeks, despite having negative pressure. We put on ORC collagen. It was very difficult to get those little slits in there. So I tried to put things apart as much as possible. I applied the negative pressure over the ORC collagen. I did use the silicone hybrid drape, because you could see over on the left, there's a little bit of skin disruption. And then after 7 days, look how robust that wound is. It's beautiful. It's granulating. And I had a 15% reduction in my wound size. Here's some clinical pearls about using collagen. So the medical surgical dressing policy, and you're going to have to look up at your own physical intermediary. So my area of where I practice uses National Government Services. There's Florida First Coast. There's lots of them out there, because everybody has their own individual policy. So and in most policies, it says if you're using collagen, you need a full thickness wound, which means you're going to have to document in your medical record a full thickness wound. And you need to have either minimal or moderate exudate. So if you say document heavy exudate, it's not going to be covered. So you you have to follow those documentation rules, and the documentation must support its use. And another clinical pearl is the collagen, being the sacrificial substrate as it is, may be gone when you go change the dressing. So a lot of times I've gotten phone calls, I changed the dressing, and I don't think the person who changed the dressing before me put the ORC collagen in, because it's gone. So just because you don't see it doesn't mean the person before you didn't use it. It means it acted as that sacrificial substrate. So you can sometimes, what I will do if I'm changing it and not seeing that collagen in there, I'll increase the frequency of the dressing change, or I will use a couple of layers, usually two. Also, know your patient. Remember, this is an animal product. So if your patient is a vegan, they may not want to use this product. You need to have that discussion with them. If they have certain religious beliefs and do not want to use beef or pork or horse or cow or fish, you need to know what your collagen has come from and talk with your patient. Maybe they will take bovine or cow over a porcine or ovine, so sheep or pig collagen. And then if you are practicing out of the United States where there is still pork insulin, if they're allergic to pork insulin, you may want to think about not giving them a collagen based from pork. And so don't expect a miracle overnight. It may take about 2 weeks before you see any significant change in the wound if you're not using it in conjunction with negative pressure. So with that, I want to thank Dr. Klein for a wonderful presentation. I want to thank you all for coming today, and I'm glad that you are interested to learning about how to improve your patients' outcomes with advanced therapies and learning about combining advanced therapies in these hard to heal wounds.